This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Valerie Huber with us on the program. Valerie is president of ASCEND, formerly known as the National Abstinence Education Association. ASCEND is a professional association that represents organizations and individuals who support a priority on risk avoidance through abstinence education. Valerie formerly served as the director of a community-based abstinence initiative and as a Title V coordinator for the state of Ohio. She is with us today to discuss why more American teenagers are delaying sexual activity and the critical role that parents play in helping teens make wise and cautious decisions about sex. Valerie, welcome back to Family Policy Matters. As always, it's great to have you on the program.
Well, it's great to be here.
Well, we're so appreciative of the great work that you do. And of course, Valerie, we hear a lot these days about teens who are becoming sexually active, but the actual percentage of teens who are abstinence or who are not active sexually is actually pretty high. How many teens are choosing to delay sexual activity nationwide?
Well, the majority of teens have not had sex, and those numbers have actually been moving in the right direction over the last two decades, which is probably a surprise to most of your listeners and to Americans in general. In fact, over the last 20 years, we have seen more than a 15% increase in the percentage of teens who are not having sex.
Well, that's wonderful. If more teens are choosing to delay sex, that raises an important question as to what is driving this trend. And I know that ASCEND recently commissioned a survey from Barna Research to ask that exact question. What questions were asked in this Barna Research poll, and what did they discover?
Well, it was a pretty rich poll, and it was quite extensive. The one that you're referring to is the survey that Barna conducted of 18 and 19-year-old teens. These are teens who either have just graduated from high school or will be graduating soon. Nevertheless, they have, for the most part, completed their sex education classes in schools. And so we asked them a variety of questions about that experience, but also about their own behaviors, whether healthy or unhealthy. Among those 18 and 19-year-old teens who have not had sex, we asked them what compelled them to wait. And interestingly enough, it wasn't the fear of sexually transmitted disease. It wasn't a fear of becoming pregnant or getting someone pregnant. The top two reasons really should be encouraging to us. One was their own personal values, and the second is they don't want to just have casual sex. They want to make sure that when they have sex, it's within the context of a committed relationship. Now, we hope that that means marriage. For some it does, for some it doesn't, but it's certainly a step in the right direction and certainly more optimistic and hopeful than many of the headlines that we've heard where casual sex really is the mainstay for this generation. It appears that, in fact, it is not.
Well, that's really encouraging. And Valerie, I know you've been in this arena for a long time. What does this finding tell us about what teens really want and what they really need as it relates to sex education programs?
Well, as you know, the type of sex education that students are receiving throughout the country has really, I would say, a troubling turn, particularly under the policies of the Obama administration. As you know, decisions that are made in Washington, D.C. have either for good or for ill a trickle-down effect to the various states and to the communities, and this is one instance where that is true. We have seen sex education classes put much more of an emphasis on normalizing sexual activity among teens, basically telling them, hey, it's okay for you to experiment sexually. Just make sure that you are, quote unquote, careful and don't get pregnant or cause a pregnancy. And so this whole discussion has been reduced to merely a pregnancy prevention approach. What this survey tells us is that when teens are making these sorts of decisions, they're thinking about something much more holistic than whether or not they are afraid or concerned about causing or becoming pregnant. So our discussion needs to be more holistic as well.
Well, sure. And when you look at, as you mentioned, those two primary reasons that teens wait, personal values and wanting to wait for a committed relationship, I mean, that's really significant. Teens are looking more deeply at this issue than probably a lot of parents and educators would give them credit for. And I think that is so key. And again, that's so encouraging. And it's so important, the work that you all are doing at Ascend, to study this issue and get that information out so that we really understand better how teens are thinking about these issues and what can be done to effectively encourage them to remain abstinent, to delay sexual activity until they enter into, hopefully, a committed married relationship. Now, Valerie, a new study published in the latest issue of the journal Pediatrics found that when parents set rules and monitor their children's activities, then kids tend to delay sexual activity longer. What is your response to the study's findings? And in general, how important are parents to helping teens make wise decisions about sexual activity?
Well, I don't think we can overestimate the importance of parents. This study is one of those that, you know, from a common sense standpoint, you think, well, why did they have to do a study to tell us that? We would assume that to be the case. But it's always good to have the research back up what we intuitively know to be true, and that is when parents are engaged and involved setting boundaries and providing oversight, that's going to have a very real effect on the behaviors of teens. Just about every survey of teens out there, when asked where they want direction regarding dating, sex, and related issues, the number one response is from their parents. I think that a lot of times parents feel either ill-equipped, maybe even hypocritical if they engaged in sex as a teen themselves. It's a topic that's uncomfortable, and so it's easier to just stay away from it. And so because of that, a lot of times parents aren't saying things when in fact they need to. I think, though, as well, that the cultural messaging also has an impact on how parents often communicate with their teens. And so you see campaigns that say, for example, talk to your kids about sex. That's a pretty generic request, and that's how Planned Parenthood and other organizations like that encourage parents to be involved. But what does that really mean? Well, one of the results of the Barna research that we haven't even released yet also speaks to this issue. And we asked those same teens, where are you feeling pressure to have sex? And not surprisingly, the top responses were movies, music, social media, things such as that were the top factors that made teens feel like sex was expected. Right below that were the sex ed classes that focus on normalizing teen sex. But I believe that it was about 15 to 17% of teens also said that they were feeling pressured to have sex from their parents.
Wow.
And so when you just have a conversation about sex and either say explicitly or implicitly, I know you're going to have sex, so make sure you use contraception when you do, I'm wondering if that is sending a message then to these teens that sex is expected. So having those conversations as parents are very key, but the research is pretty clear that when having those conversations, we need to be very clear, set those expectations high, while also communicating to our child that even if they make unhealthy decisions, that's not going to compromise our love for them. But that we believe that they can and should wait for sex.
As the parent of two teenagers myself, I can very much relate to that. And I think one thing I would add is that even if those teens don't appear to be listening to what you're saying, they probably are. And as you've said, don't ever underestimate the impact that your words of encouragement, your words of direction as a parent can have on them. And it's really our role and our responsibility as parents to provide clear guidance and direction of what those expectations are, what we know to be best for them, and steer them as best we can in that right direction. Valerie, in light of the critically important role that parents do have in the lives of their children, and the fact that teens are choosing to delay sex mainly due to, as you've said, personal values and a desire to wait for a committed relationship, what do you believe the proper role of our government is in using our tax dollars for sex education? Should our federal government and our state tax dollars be used to promote a comprehensive sex ed type of agenda, or to promote abstinence education that encourages students to be responsible and to delay sexual activity?
Well, ideally, neither the state government nor the federal government should be involved in sex education. I just want to throw that out there. That's the ideal. They have been involved in some manner in this issue since World War I, so I think it's highly unlikely that that ideal is going to become reality anytime soon. So then we need to look at what sort of sex education are our tax dollars going toward. Are they, as they are right now, about 95%, in fact, of our taxpayer dollars devoted to sex education are going to programs that are telling teens to go ahead and experiment, just be careful? That is a message that, as our Barna research shows, makes teens feel pressured to have sex. But even more than that, it's really setting a standard that is putting our young people at increased risk. And certainly that is not a wise use or a healthy use of our taxpayer dollars. Certainly the emphasis should be on what the social science and the health research and what we know to be the healthiest choice for teens, and that is giving them the information, skills, and encouragement to wait for sex, and if they've already been sexually experienced, to make a healthier choice in the future.
Well, and we can only encourage our lawmakers and parents and appointed officials, school administrators, and other educators to understand that. And that's why we're so grateful, Valerie, for you and for Ascend and all the great work that you're doing. Before we close out our time for this week, I do want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can go to learn more about Ascend and the great work that you're doing.
Well, we are in the midst of a rebrand, and so we have a holding page for a new website that is being created as we speak. They can go to weascend.org, and it will, for right now, take you back to the NAEA, National Abstinence Education Association website, but very soon we will have a brand new website with new data, a new look, and it's much more easy to navigate for parents, policymakers, and concerned citizens.
Great. Well, let me repeat that website again, weascend.org. Again, thank you so much for your time today, for being with us on Family Policy Matters, and for your really important work promoting sexual risk avoidance and abstinence education nationwide. This is such a critically important issue for our teens, and it's so important that parents are involved.
Thank you, John, for supporting this important agenda for our young people, and we really appreciate your partnership.
Well, and we appreciate you so much, Valerie, and for all that Ascend does. Thanks so much for being with us today, and all the best for the future.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.